Also, with the apartment this empty, it really echoes in here.
There is a little bit of an echo. Not bad, but a touch. Yeah, you can hear it. But that there's going to be, yeah, we have all these adjustments today. And it's going to be like with the camera. So I have the camera here, but my laptop's over here where you are. So I'm going to have to like try to not be like, who do I look at? Who do I look at? I don't know. My eye, if at some point in the podcast, my eyes just cross and I just kind of fall out of the chair. It's all right. I'll come to eventually.
Yeah, yeah. We'll get there.
Oh, crap. Did school start for you today?
Not exactly. So this is like the teacher week where we have our setup and stuff. But okay. Today and tomorrow is actually pretty much just new teachers have required meetings. And it's an opportunity for me to go in and get classroom setup done.
Mm, okay.
Today, though, actually, so my folks have been out of town for a couple of weeks with my sister up in Denver, and both my dad and I had birthdays during that time. So
happy belated birthday.
Yeah, I went in today for a little bit to get my keys, start moving desks around in my classroom, that kind of basic stuff, and then we actually, you know, we went to Topgolf for a little bit. Couple hours, went to lunch. It was a nice hangout. Yeah.
Nice. Not bad at all. Not bad at all. You know what we did? We did Medieval Times.
Oh.
Have you ever done that?
I have not. I've heard about it.
It's,
and it seems like a really cool concept.
Like if you had a group of people who were like super excited, like just out to have a good time, like you could have a lot of fun. It's expensive. Like somebody footed the bill as like a birthday celebration and we got to just kind of like ride their coattails. So, like, we hadn't done it before because, like, it's too much for a family outing for us. Like, it's just too much. We couldn't do it.
Fair.
So, we were lucky, but we got to do that. It was a lot of fun. So, the girls got, like, you know, like, the knight walks up and has the ribbon on his lance. You know, Brooklyn got the ribbon
yes.
and tossed a flower Aww. To Caitlin. It was fun. They had a blast, man. Caitlin was all in on it too, man. Like the Green Knight went bad, started talking trash. Oh, that guy's gonna get the punishment. And she had no idea what the punishment was, but she knew it was gonna be bad. She was all in, man. It was really funny. No,
I feel like that's a phrase that needs to like show up in your house from now on, though.
You're
like,
gonna get the punishment.
You
know what,
look, if you keep that up, you're gonna get the punishment.
That's fantastic. I might need to use that. That's good. All right, let's hit an intro. Let's jump into it.
Welcome to the podcast, Blue Collar Scholars. Not long ago, a group of brilliant minds met together at a pub to discuss their unfinished works. They recognized the value of coming together around delicious beverages and having meaningful conversations. That group was known as the Inklings. The Inkledoo podcast here, we're working to be the second iteration of that group. So pour yourself a craft beverage, pull up a chair, and join the conversation.
Did you have anything interesting or good while you were on your outing?
Yeah, I had, so not something new, but the Tower Station from up in Flagstaff, the IPA, had that today, which worked really well. It was, you know, today was one of those days, man, where like, yeah, it wasn't as hot. We finally didn't hit 110, but we didn't hit 110 because like storms are rolling through. So it was a little bit muggy.
Yeah.
But, you know, they did a good job at Topgolf. We had the, like, massive fan blowing misters on us the whole time. And it was delightful. And it just, that Tower Station worked really well with, like, the pretzel bites that we did as, like, an appetizer to hold us over while we were out there. Mm-hmm. It was a nice one, man. It was a good one to sit there and kind of take my time with.
Yeah.
You know?
Tower Station is good because they're, like, $10 for 4-pint cans, you know, like they're very reasonably priced to get at home. So it's like good and value. And I like that.
Especially like when you're looking at it, it's a good craft beer.
Mm-hmm.
And like, so for it to be a good craft beer that is that price. I mean, that's tough to beat.
I'll take it. I'm trying to think, man. I don't think I've had anything interesting at all. Like I was at Medieval Times. I was like, oh, I somebody footed the bill for the ticket, so I'll get a drink. And then they were like, yeah, so it's like $15 for this and then another $8. And I was like, yeah, no, I'm out. I'll have, you know, bread and water or whatever they serve us peasants. You know, like, I'm good with that. So,
no, you wouldn't have had water. They'd have brought you some meat or something because the water would kill you.
I don't think I've had anything. It's so hot. My drink of choice right now is carbonated water. You know,
yeah, just because I
need a little, when you get super dehydrated, I just need a little carbonation, and that's kind of all I want anymore. So, yeah, nothing for me, man. Super lame. Gonna have to, yeah. Actually, I don't even feel bad about it right now, because like I said, when it's this hot, like I'm not in the mood.
Yeah,
for nothing.
We're trying not to die.
Yeah, yeah, we're in survival mode. Yeah. Yeah, so.
Not exactly hunting down the luxuries at this point, you know.
No, because then you'd have to go outside.
Oof.
And that sucks, you know.
Yeah, if you can avoid it.
Yeah. So, but that's all right. We got a good topic. I'm interested to talk about this one today. It's a big one, or it might turn into a big one. And so if we need to break it up and come back to it. So we're going to wrap up I'm not even close to done with this book. This stupid book is going to take me for freaking ever to read. But we're not going to keep talking. But we're going to talk about it today and then next week. And then it's off the list. We'll move it on. So if we need to, like, pack some of this stuff into a different conversation for then, we can do that. But as I was reading through it, one of the things that stuck out to me was this letter from a bishop. I didn't write his name down, whatever. He was in the early hundreds, you know, I mean, after St. Augustine, right? So St. Augustine really laid out the premise that to go to, like, soothsayers and diviners, that they get that information from demons, right? Augustine was the one who really, so after him, everybody used him as kind of the authority. And that's what this bishop did. And I think he was in, like, the year 900, something like that. So, I mean, it was well after, but not into the
pre-Middle Ages yet. Still.
This is still early. But what it was is, it was a bishop kind of writing to his people saying, hey, don't go to these people. Don't go to soothsayers. Don't go to the people trying to read your future and tell you all kinds of secrets and all stuff. So kind of instructing them, hey, these people are not from God. They're not utilizing the gifts of God to help edify the church. They're, you know, in league with demons, and they're not there to help you. But that's just context. The thing that stuck out to me was that what he said was, if you go to a soothsayer, I kind of want to read it because I'm not going to say it right. He says, if you go to a soothsayer, you immediately lose your sacrament of baptism, and only through much hard penance and alms can you have any hope of being saved. And so that's kind of, that line is what I want to work through, but there's like a bunch to unpack there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the first one, getting into our philosophy mode here, we'll put our philosophy hats on. So, like, defining the word, what is a sacrament? That was the first one, because when they said you could lose the sacrament of baptism, I was like, that doesn't sound like something that you can lose. But then I was like, maybe I need to define that word differently. I don't know.
No, I think you're probably working with a pretty good definition. I mean, so one of the main classes that I teach is a sacraments class. So I'm trying to decide, like, how technical we need to be on it. But, like, really and truly, the basic kind of working definition of a capital S sacrament is it is one of seven efficacious signs of grace instituted by Christ for the good of, for the building up of the body, the church. Now, in that, there are a bunch of, you know, this is one of those things where it's like, okay, cool. So we've defined that. And now in that definition, here are some words that we need to define.
Right.
One of the big ones, efficacious, because efficacious means effective,
right?
And what that means in this context is that the sacrament does what is symbolized. It makes real what is symbolized.
Okay.
It is effective in and of itself. There are requirements for the sacraments. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's not just like a symbol, it does a thing.
When you are baptized and you are either submerged under the water or you have water poured over you, either way, when that happens, you are baptized. You know, later on when you go through the church and you get the holy water and, you know, that kind of stuff, that's a reminder of it, but you're not being baptized then.
Right, right.
Yeah. Okay. So,
how can you lose sacraments?
No, you can't lose a sacrament.
Okay.
Because again, they're effective. They do what they said. But what can happen? So, like, baptism is the sacrament of salvation. It is the sacrament by which we become part of God's family. We become members of the church. We gain access to all of those heavenly goods.
Okay.
However, being baptized guarantees us access to salvation. It doesn't guarantee salvation. Like, a person who's baptized can still reject the gifts, can reject those graces later on in their life through their choices and those kinds of things. I've got to imagine that's the idea the bishop was talking about. I don't know whether it was an English-speaking bishop, and right, even if it was, 900s English would have been a lot different than ours, so there's translations going on there. I've got to imagine that that had to have been what the bishop was talking about, is this idea of the effects of your baptism, the rewards of your baptism, those you could lose. Okay. But he talks about the idea of penance to regain your salvation, but what he doesn't say is that you will be rebaptized, because you won't. That baptism happened and it worked. It did its job.
Right. Yeah. I will say that in what I didn't include is there was this lingering sense of doubt in the language that the translator used for it, because obviously he wasn't English speaking, right?
Sure.
And so it was kind of, you know, with much penance, you can hope to be saved, which I guess we're all, we can all hope to be saved. And that could be my modern interpretation and use of the word hope compared to biblical use of hope. But it didn't ring like you went to a soothsayer and you lose the effects of your baptism. It wasn't like, yeah, you know, you repented, now you're forgiven, now you move forward. It was just kind of like, yeah, you better keep working on it, like, all the way to the end, because we're not 100% sure that that what you did wasn't so bad that you won't be let in.
It sounds kind of like an early take on the idea of excommunication, which is, you know, not itself a pun. I say an early idea, like it wasn't something that had been around for centuries at that point, but regardless. But like, the idea behind excommunication is that because of a thing you've done, you are out of communion. You are excommunicado.
Right.
You have broken away from the church and from Christ, who is the head of the body of the church. And so, like, from that perspective, you know, like, so if I were to do something that that resulted in full-on excommunication. So we're not talking about just a sin that damages my relationship with God.
You're talking,
but like, if I were to be
heresy and all,
if I were to be an apostate,
yeah.
If I were to, like, go out publicly tomorrow and start denouncing the Christian faith, and start false teaching, like, not just false understandings of Christ, but actually denying Christ's divinity and things like that. If I were to do that, I'm an apostate. And if I do that, as a Catholic, I can't just go to confession to my local priest and be like, okay, cool, we're chill now. Like, I have done a public harm to the church.
Mm-hmm.
And so there needs to be, like, some kind of public reinstatement. So, like, I would have to probably go to the bishop here in Phoenix, or at least petition the bishop's office. I might not have to meet with him.
Right.
Like, basically denounce the things that I had said, acknowledge that I was speaking falsehood, and seek reinstatement, like reunification with the church.
Interesting. Okay. Cause this is, and touches on one of the criticisms that Catholicism gets is the kind of not salvation through faith and grace alone, you know, type of thing, even though we know that is. But then there's this also, and every, you know, it's always semantics. And so, like, I'm
sure
not interested in the Protestant Catholic conversation right now, but that is a criticism that it receives, just like Judaism, just like everything that has any sort of action requirements, they can, that it will elicit that response from critics out there. And so it's like, I, that makes sense to me, but like,
to be clear though, yeah, just real quick, like, my reaching out to the bishop is not actually, whether the bishop responds to that positively or not is not actually like a deciding factor in my salvation, because my salvation is still being worked out with me and God.
Oh,
but that's okay, a matter of for me to be able to come to the church and seek further sacraments from the church.
Okay. So we're talking like community, like it's not salvation. It's largely about community.
It's largely about the idea of avoiding scandal. So like if I am openly denouncing the teachings of the church, and then people are seeing me at Sunday going forward and receiving communion with it being no problem, that is a possible, that is most likely a colossal stumbling block for those people in their own faith.
I just saw that dude on Friday and now Sunday. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That is,
I was watching that YouTube video where he said that that the church doesn't know what the hell it's talking about, and
here he's
receiving the Eucharist, and I don't know.
I like that clarification. I don't know that, and this is just going to be me being obnoxious, but like, I don't know that I've ever heard a Catholic give me that clarification. Like, I'm sure they probably believe it, but whether they say it, you know, it's always one of those things where like, that's the first time I swear, I could be wrong, but it, to my knowledge,
I wouldn't be surprised. Like, here's the thing, man. We are operating at a certain level of nerd.
Fair.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
no, so it's kind of, and what I'm, and I mean that in the same way that I would talk about, like with, you know, when people talk about the idea of inside baseball.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you know, if you were, for example, going through an RCIA class coming into the church, you know what they're going to do? They're going to tell you to avoid doing things that break your relationship with the church.
Yeah.
You know what they're not going to do? Spend a ton of time going over the minutiae of the process for reinstatement in the church.
Right.
Because that's a thing that is only going to affect a very small minority of people.
Right. And that that makes sense. That makes sense. But I mean, like, I just felt like the need to like confirm that. Be like, I like that. That makes so much more sense. And I think there's so much value in emphasizing.
This is why I teach theology.
Right. In emphasizing the community in that. And this is probably, and this is going to be the frustrating thing, because I thought the next point that I was going to bring up was going to be very, you know, evocative of conversation. And we probably already answered it. But I'm going to ask it anyway, because I have it typed down and I'm going to bring it up.
Let's go.
But the penance thing, and this is actually so, just kind of dig into this a little bit for my own personal sake as well. How does penance work? Penance is not considered sacrament, right? Like sacrament is.
So, okay, here's where we get tricky because of just the fact that some of the sacraments have multiple names.
Okay.
So like there is a sacrament called penance. It's also the same sacrament that's called reconciliation or confession.
Okay.
It's just another name for it.
Okay.
But penance itself is is an act of kind of restoration. An attempt to, so like you've gone through the confession process, you've acknowledged you've done something wrong, you've confessed it, you've sought forgiveness, and now after God has said, yes, you are forgiven, my son, my daughter, you are forgiven. Penance serves a couple of different purposes for us.
Okay.
You know, there is very much an individual purpose for us as well. Penance is good for the penitent. Penance is good for the person who has done something, because much of our sin is habitual. Much of the sins that we commit are like, you know, things we do over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And so like confessing it and trying to just say, okay, I'm going to take this thing out of my life that I want gone. you know, look at what happens to the rate of overeating in people who are quitting smoking. Why? Because it's a lot harder to just have nothing in your mouth than to have like that cigarette replaced with something else.
Right.
And so the penitence, the act of penance that's done is, in one way, it's intended to be like making sure our first steps after confession are towards God. And so that's why, you know, the penance isn't something, you know, sometimes we get made fun of for the fact that like almost regardless of what you go in to confess, you're probably going to be told to say like a couple Our Fathers.
That's exactly what I was going to bring up. I was like, the only thing anybody's ever told me to do is like a couple of Our Fathers. And I was like, I feel like what I did was a lot worse than that, but
yeah. But again, that's not the point of the penance. The penance isn't about like the whole concept of having gone to confession is acknowledging that I can't fix this.
Right.
The harm I've caused is beyond my power to fix. Okay. And so the penance isn't about like doing something that is equal to make up for the harm that we've done.
Right.
If we were capable of that, Christ wouldn't have had to die on the cross for us.
Touche. Excellent point.
So instead, it's about like, I do want to show my sincerity though. So having been forgiven, I'm going to make sure that the very first thing I do, having been forgiven, is something that brings me closer to God rather than something that brings me further away.
I like that. I'll just stick on this bishop's example in
Go
this
for
letter,
it.
But I think it applies to us now and probably forever on that. But so when he was talking about doing penance, the perception I got was it was like paying against a credit card debt, right? So like this guy, you know, this person went to a soothsayer and incurred a debt, right? And so then what he would have to do is like giving of alms and pray, like different penances to essentially pay back that debt is what it felt like. You know, like I'm translating that in my brain into my current understanding. And that I don't think is an uncommon understanding of penance and reconciliation, because I think it was also, I think we're talking the Middle Ages, medieval times, like I went to medieval times. That was bad. Okay. Sorry. I derailed my own self here.
You are not.
But like that was also a period of time in the church, in church history, where, you know, it's not exactly like the shining moments across the board, human history, you know, in those periods, you know, that like 1000 to 1500 was a pretty rough time for a lot of things, not exactly the golden years, you know. So so I don't think, even coming out of that, because I mean we've had it in Protestant versions too with Puritanism, and we've had all kinds of different versions and variations.
Sure.
What, you know, how do we not think of it that way? Because it definitely feels that way. Because again, I'm sorry, I'm still going on and on again about, because I'm thinking back to this video I watched with Ben Shapiro and Matt Frad, and they were talking about, you know, Matt Frad drops Phariseeism, and he's like, well, you're using that wrong. Ben Shapiro's like, that's not the point of Phariseeism, but keep going. But what Matt Frad reframed it as is that legalism basically takes us to the bare minimum of what we can get away with instead of how much good can we do. Right. So Matt Frad beautifully reframed it. It was actually really well done. But penance and penance as part of reconciliation feels like it falls in that same bucket of legalism, where like even legalism, like the Pharisees, like their point, Ben Shapiro's point, was that the point of the law and writing these things is to better understand God and to better know him. But that's not that's the ivory tower's perspective, not the human nature that interacts with it on a day to day and doesn't end up at the best place, if that makes sense.
Well, and sometimes it doesn't. Like, and again, right. That's the thing. Fair. Because, you know, there were a number of Pharisees who did follow Christ.
Sure.
Or were amongst the early church followers and things. But again, as far as this idea of penance goes, a big part of it, I think, in terms of the mindset, one thing that really helps is from a sacramental perspective, you are forgiven for the sins. Like, you've received forgiveness. The sins are removed from your soul at the moment of absolution, which happens before you've even been assigned your penance, let alone having done it.
Right.
And your forgiveness is not conditional.
Mm.
So it's not about God saying, I will forgive you for these things that you've done, provided that, you know, you go and say this many Our Fathers or read this particular psalm.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's not about that. It's about, okay, so having received this gift of forgiveness, you know, or going all the way back to when we were talking about the gifts of baptism, like having been given this gift of membership in the church as part of God's family, if I know that doing this breaks that communion and I choose to do it anyway, ugh, what a horrific decision I've made.
Yeah.
It's not about the idea of being rebaptized. It's about the idea of coming to God again and saying, like, I know I've screwed up, which if I know it, you know it way more than I do.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, like, I know I can count on your mercy, but I want to demonstrate my sincerity anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, like, a lot of times we come back to the examples built around your girls.
Mm-hmm.
If your girls come to you and they say they're sorry for something they've done, they mean it.
Yeah.
Most of the time. You know, sometimes they're told they have to say sorry, right. And that's a whole different thing.
Right.
But, like, they're sorry and they mean it. How do we know the difference between them saying they're sorry and they mean it versus I'm sorry because I don't want to be in trouble? What do they do afterwards?
Oh, that's you got me there. That I wasn't expecting that turn. That's exactly right.
I mean, and so it's the same for us, except for we don't have to prove it to God.
Right.
God already knows. Just like you know when your girls are apologizing, they're going to do something, either the same thing or something similar to mm-hmm. drive you nuts again, mm-hmm. probably in the next 10 to 15 minutes.
Yes. Yes.
But for these first few minutes afterwards, they meant it, and you can tell that because they're trying really hard to do the opposite of the thing that got them in trouble.
Yeah.
The opposite of what they did wrong. And it's for them, too. They're doing this other thing because, you know, they've got these habits mm-hmm. of operating a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
So now, slowly, over time, this didn't go well. I don't want that to happen again. So I'm going to do this. We're building new habits to replace it.
Yeah.
By leaving the confession and sitting down for a few minutes and praying, we are acknowledging that we need help and we're practicing turning to where we need the help from. And so it really is the idea of penance. Ultimately, everything we do, even our worship of God, we have to recognize is not for God's sake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The reason God calls us to worship, the reason God calls us to penance, the reason God calls us to conversion isn't because God is in some way suffering when we don't do these things.
Yeah.
Like, God's not up there feeling neglected because we're not praying to him.
Mm-hmm.
But because God knows that we will be most ourselves and most in that joy for which he created us if we're doing those things. And so penance is about replacing the bad habit with something good in what seem like incredibly small steps.
Right.
Which is also important because that means they're steps we know we can take.
You can handle it going there.
One thing a lot of Catholics don't know is that, like, if you're given a penance. And like sometimes some priests, you know, go to the opposite extremes. Sometimes they get pretty like, they've got this really noble notion and vision in their head of what a penance is going to be. But if it's something that you feel like is actually either excessive or just something that you're not going to be able to do in a timely fashion,
mm-hmm.
like, you know what, Father, I stopped in on my way to work.
Yeah.
And this is going to require more time than I have right now. And I'm not going to remember afterwards. And I want to follow through and perform my penance. You have the right to ask for a different penance from the confessor, and they're supposed to give you one. Like, because again, it's not about a punishment. It's about like, hey, what are my first steps going to be?
Yeah.
After I've been forgiven.
I like that. I like that a lot. It's so interesting because everything that you're saying is kind of like the opposite of what I was expecting, you know? I don't know if you know
that's what I'm here for.
But that's what but that's what happened. And so I'm like, I'm kind of like on my heels here a little bit, which is good. Because the idea that, you know, the faith is not the same from 900 to now means that there's been progress, considerations, language, all of these different things have gone into moving us closer to God and not farther away. So that feels good. And I feel like that's heading in towards my life lesson is that I came into this conversation with presuppositions, right? So, and presuppositions that were affirmed by the reading of a book, right?
Mm-hmm.
In context, made total sense, right? But
yeah,
what it did was it kind of put me in an echo chamber, right? Like the presuppositions were the criticisms, right, that the Catholic Church has received. And then I'm reading a book which is dealing with one of the instances in which the Catholic Church is not particularly proud of in its moment in history. So you're like, oh yeah, those two dots connect. And you're like, hang on, wait a second. You know, like, and then I just made that connection and ran, you know? And so being aware of our presuppositions, like what we think and then finding affirming information is good, but it's also good to do it in community and bounce it off of this stuff and it's also good to get definitions. You know, like if you think you know these things, ask somebody for their definition, right? Work through it. Like having you redefine these things and reestablish these things. Like, again, like I thought I was going to have so much more to say and I'm just sitting here with nothing and it's frustrating, but it's also very good. You know, like it feels good to know that the negative assumptions that I made based on everything that's inside my own brain was broken up as soon as I bounced it off somebody else's brain, right? And that's the power of conversations. That's the importance of conversations. And then just as a life lesson, you know, just being aware that we form those opinions, we form those things usually before and oftentimes without additional information from outside sources. So we just got to be aware of the things that we've done in our own brain without any input.
Absolutely. You've got to keep an eye out for the confirmation bias, mm-hmm. this idea of, but at the same time, one of the things that I think I'll use as my life lesson, kind of springing off of what you were just saying, keep in mind that those things that seemed like a problem to you, that's not what we're disagreeing about.
Mm-hmm.
Those ideas are very real. And so there is like a genuine confirmation here. Like, I agree wholeheartedly. People viewing penance as something that is done to re-earn, to get the stamps on your card so that you can get into heaven.
Yes.
Like, it's one of those old school Subway ones where you need, like, the 10 little stickers to get your free 6-inch. Like, that's not how it works. And there's a lot of people who think that it is.
Yes.
And there's a lot of people who think that it is because of things that they've read, things that they've experienced, mm-hmm. things they've been told by other people who are supposed experts. And so it is that it's important to, you know, honestly, man, it's like looking in journalism. Why are there so many like false reports? Well, because journalists don't double check, don't corroborate their sources anymore.
Right.
So like if you've read one book that says this, and I get that this is a big ask as like an everyday living
right,
thing.
Right.
But if you've read one book that says this, you should probably look for a book that has the opposite opinion on it and read through it and compare them. And again, in community with other people to help you process and to help us grow in our understanding.
Yeah.
Because it would also be just as easy for me to read from someone who like just confirms all of the good things that I think about the Catholic Church and be right. like, yeah, obviously right. the Catholic Church is fantastic and perfect, and why wouldn't anyone want to join? Well, if that's my approach, then when I talk to someone who doesn't want to join, what grounds do I have for a conversation?
Yeah.
I need to at least be aware of what are the problems, perceived and real, because there are definitely both.
Yeah.
There are some problems people have with the Catholic Church that are just a misunderstanding, like they don't actually know what the church says. And then there are some things, like you said, the church has a long history, and not all of that history is stuff that we're putting on the recruiting flyers.
Right, right. Yeah. You know, it makes me think of our podcasts on heresy, where we were like, you know, like it's good to know, like we knew the gospel and then it was good to know the heresy or like the back and forth. You knew both sides of it because it better rounded out the conversation, better rounded out your information. And then you knew why you stood where you stood, which is so important.
Exactly.
You know? So, oh man, I'm going to be chewing on this one for a little bit. It's good. It's good. I like, it's so frustrating that I did that. Cause like, I know that I'm not supposed to do that. And I friggin' did it anyway. You know, like now I'm just looking back. I'm like, stupid confirmation bias. Thought I was so smart. Look, man.
You know? But again, you were smart. It was an accurate reading of the stuff. And you intelligently were like, oh, I'm going to set this up as questions. I'm going to have this conversation with AJ. We'll see what happens.
That's true.
But you know what, man? I got to tell you, with the school year getting ready to get started, late night thoughts and things rattling in my head, or like if I were to try and watch the Women's World Cup game that's starting at midnight tonight, if I were going to do any of those things, you know what I would need, Brandon?
Lots of coffee.
Lots of coffee. Lots of coffee. By the gallon.
And we can do that for you. We would love to provide that for you. Hop on that Inkledoo website. Order a couple of bags. We roast it fresh, ship it to you. And that's how you can support these meaningful conversations. I appreciate that setup because I was digging deep. I was reaching. I was trying. I had nothing to go on. I was...
We're a team.
I was good. I like that. I appreciate that. Oh, man. You got anything else on your brain tonight, man?
Nah, man. I'm good.
Very cool. With that, we will say...
adieu.